Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a good afternoon to you. Wonderful to be in your company this afternoon. Back with you here live on Judaism 101.9 on Chai FM. It is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you for the next 45 minutes or so to talk about things that pertain to our Jewish lives, things that are happening in the Jewish calendar, and some of the thoughts and processes of thought of the things that are coming up and that we need to know. So let's begin by saying that I am sure there's not hardly a Jew in the world who doesn't know what's happening right now on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Well, it's been much publicized, of course. If we read any of the news reports and any of the news stations around the world, we know that there is action on that Temple Mount because it is a great time in the Muslim calendar, Ramadan, and of course great services, and of course as we know, very often calls to violence, etc., that are taking place right now with thousands and thousands of people flocking to be on that Temple Mount right now. But do you know, as a Jewish community, what happened 2,373 years ago today on the Temple Mount? Yeah, it's important for us to have these flashbacks, I guess, when people start throwing at us that we have no long-term connection with the land of Israel, that we're relative newcomers, that it actually belonged to others. But 2,373 years ago, yes, you heard that right, 2,373 years ago, in the year 349 before the Common Era, the second Beit HaMikdash, the second temple, was completed. And the joyous dedication of that second Beit HaMikdash, that second temple, on the site of the first temple in Jerusalem, was celebrated on the 3rd of Adar, this day, in the year 3412 from creation. That's 349 years before the Common Era. 4 years of hard work in order to put up that Beit HaMikdash, to put up that temple. That was what it took. But that dates us back 2,373 years. Remember that it was 500 years before that that the first temple was completed by King Solomon. So the first temple by King Solomon was destroyed by the Babylonians in 423 before the Common Era. And at that time, the prophet Yirmiyahu prophesied, and he said, "Thus says the Lord, after 70 years of Babylon will I visit you and return you to this place." In 371, the Persian emperor Cyrus permitted the Jews to return to Yehuda, to Judah, to Israel, and rebuild the temple. But the construction was halted the next year when the Sumerians persuaded Cyrus to withdraw that permission. Ahasuerus II of Purim fame upheld the moratorium. And only in 353, exactly 70 years after the destruction, did the building of the temple resume under Dariovish, or Darius II. So an amazing little stat that 2,373 years ago today, on the Temple Mount, there were celebrations for the opening of and the final construction of the second Beit HaMikdash, the second temple in Jerusalem. It is quite amazing because, of course, there is that link with Ahasuerus and with the period of time of the Purim story, which we'll talk about a little bit later on as well, and, of course, next week too, where we're thinking about Purim, which happened in the period of time between the two Beit HaMikdash. And yes, it was Ahasuerus, at the behest of Mordechai and Esther from the Purim story, who eventually gave that permission and enabled the return to Yehuda and the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash, of the temple. Now, if we fast forward a couple of days and we go to Friday, is another significant date in the Jewish calendar. It is the fifth day of Adar. And being that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moses passed away on the 7th, which is going to correspond with Sunday, following Hashem's instruction that Yeshua should succeed him and lead the Jewish nation into the land of Israel, Moshe Rabbeinu transferred leadership. Moses transferred the leadership duties to Yeshua on the day before he passed, the day before he passed away. So the 5th of Adar, which is this coming Friday, was the last day of Moses' leadership. His leadership then came to an end in the year 1273 before the Common Era. On the 5th of Adar was his last day, in inverted commas, in office as the leader of the Jewish people. And then, of course, he transferred leadership to Yoshua, to Joshua, and Moshe Rabbeinu ascends the mountain and leaves the Jewish people on that fateful day, on Zayin Adar, on the 7th of Adar, in the year 1273, before the Common Era. So we're going back and we're thinking of great and wondrous and incredible times in Jewish history, and of course things that happened to our people in and around this period of time. Yes, and of course the time of Adar was significant for the Purim story, and not only because Purim occurs in Adar, but because this was the date that was chosen by those lots. Remember, the word Purim means lots, lottery. Haman cast those lots in order to determine on which date and which month he was actually going to have the Jewish people, in inverted commas, obliterated, wiped from the face of the earth, taken out completely from all 127 states over which he had dominion, over which he ruled as the prime minister, as the leader, with the blessing of the king Ahasuerus, Persian Empire. And it was in the month of Adar, the month of Adar, that the lots were drawn for, and it was going to be on the 14th of Adar. He was so elated and so excited. Why? Because he said, look, it is decreed by God. This is something that, of course, lines up so well. Look, it's the day on which, or the time in which, or the month in which Moshe, Moses, the leader of the Jewish people, actually died. The Jewish people have a real downtime here. This is depression time. This is sad time. This is negative time for the Jewish people. And so look how wonderful it is that it comes out in this incredible month of Adar that the Jewish people are going to be obliterated, that they're going to be wiped out, God forbid. This was Haman's decree, his thought. Of course, he underestimated a number of things in Jewish thinking. Number one is that Moshe didn't only pass away in the month of Adar, but he was born in the month of Adar. 7th of Adar was his birthday as well. And from a Jewish point of view, a soul that ascends on high, and like Moshe Rabbeinu, by the way, we don't know the grave site of Moses, because we believe that he ascended on high and will return to lead us, please God, again very soon into Israel with the coming of Mashiach. But this was not a death in the sense of a physical departure. It was not necessarily a completely sad day for the Jewish people. It was the day on which Moshe was born as well. And therefore, with great, great aplomb, the Jewish people forged ahead. And of course, the miracles of Purim were testimony to that too.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Yes, the circular motion of Jewish history, or the way that things keep on cropping up, that keep on happening over and over again. Not only do we not necessarily learn from history, but we actually see how the same things are revisited upon us time and time and time again. And not the least of which is something that happened on the 5th of Adar. Sorry, on the 7th of Adar, I apologize, on the 7th of Adar in 1481, and that was the Spanish Inquisition. The Inquisition was created in the 12th century to find Christian heretics who would be punished or killed. And eventually, Jews too were open to such charges of heresy simply for being Jewish. And torture was routinely used to extract confessions. Now, over the years, the Inquisition, which operated, remember, with papal consent, spread to many countries. In 1481, the Inquisition began to function in Spain to expose the secret Jews known as the Anusim or Muranos. This Inquisition was anti-Jewish more than in any previous countries. The first public sentencing and burning alive of six Jewish men and one woman by the Spanish Inquisition was held on this date in Seville in southern Spain. And following the start of the Spanish Inquisition, of course, many Jews fled Spain, and notably even Christopher Columbus sailed to America. And there are a lot of theories of the fact that he was Jewish and that it was right at the start of the Spanish Inquisition. Now, let's get back to our thoughts about this period of time. And the main focus of this period of time, of course, is not on Spanish Inquisitions, not on disasters, but rather on how the Jewish people have not only survived, but how we have come alive and how we have united and how we have overcome the difficulties that have been thrown at us, no matter whether it has been in Israel, no matter whether it's been in Europe, in Spain, whether it's been in Persia with the story of Purim. And so we come to this incredible story of Purim, which is going to be taking place and commemorated, of course, over next weekend, not this coming one, but the one thereafter, where on the Thursday we will have the Tainit Esther, the Fast of Esther, on Saturday night and Sunday, the actual celebration of Purim with the mitzvot of Purim, the reading of the Megillah, the giving of Mishloach Manot, the giving of Matanot Le'evyonim, and that is food gifts to friends, charity to the poor, and the eating of a festive meal that will be on Sunday a week, when we celebrate this great festival of Purim. Now, what was Purim really all about? How did it actually come into being? Well, a brief synopsis, a brief overview, just in Judaism 101.9 terms, was that we were in the period of time, as we mentioned before, between the two Batei Migdash, the two temples, between the destruction of the first temple by Nebuchadnezzar. And here we were almost 70 years later, and the king of Persia, now the Persians, of course, had risen to power over the whole world, ruling over, as we say in the Megillah, 127 states or countries. Ahasuerus, the king, had cause to celebrate, he thought. He thought that the prophet Jeremiah's prophecy had come to fruition, and that, in fact, 70 years had already passed since the beginning of the onslaught of his predecessors to and over Israel, and that, in fact, Jerusalem would never rise again, the temple would never be rebuilt. And so he pulled out from the treasure troves all the artifacts that had been taken from the temple, and he decided to throw this massive party, this great celebration, celebrating the overthrow of Israel. But in a way, it was also a celebration, as is often with these sinister characters, an overthrow of God. This is triumph over heaven, because it was triumph over God's place, it was triumph over the temple, it was triumph over the Jewish people, and it proved to the likes of Ahasuerus and his ilk that there was nothing that could stand in the way of the onslaught of the Persian Empire. And so here they came with their great and grandiose ideas of how they were going to celebrate the fact that Jerusalem was in ruins. Unfortunately, a great party was held. Unfortunately, many Jews went along and participated. There are those who say that, in fact, Ahasuerus had made sure that every need was catered to, that there was kosher food, that there was whatever you needed, etc. However, the sinister reasons for this great celebration were for the destruction of the temple, the overthrow of Jerusalem, and the destruction of Israel. And so just being part of that had all sorts of negative connotations. Now, what happened next was, amazingly, at that party, a suggestion comes up by some of the king's men, some of his horses and men, which operated in very, very strange and sinister fashion, was that the women of the time were not being subservient, not listening to their husbands. And as a proof of it, they challenged the king to call his wife, to call Vashti to come and appear before him in a most undignified and really compromising fashion. This Ahasuerus accedes to, he does. Vashti refuses to come. The men, they say, you see, the women are learning from the queen how not to behave, how not to be subservient to their menfolk. Off with her head. And this is, in fact, what happens. Ahasuerus complies. Idiot that he was, he complies with their rabble-rousing, their pub talk, and Vashti is put to death. Now the king has to seek a new wife, and he makes a beauty pageant. Hundreds and hundreds of women are lined up to be the prospective wife. It takes a period of a number of months, a number of years, in fact, until a new queen is actually found. And the queen turns out to be a woman called Esther. Esther happens to be Jewish, and she, this great woman, is chosen as the most beautiful woman in the whole world, and she becomes the queen of Ahasuerus. Now, to add insult to injury, or to add injury to insult, the king's right-hand man at the time is a man called Haman. It seems to rhyme with it. It seems to have a link with names like Haman, Khomeini, etc. But that's for another time and another day. But let's think about the fact that Haman, this Persian ruler, wanted nothing else but the destruction of the Jewish people. What really irked him was that there was one Jew who had risen to fame and fortune in Persia. His name was Mordechai, and this Mordechai, who was the leader of the Jewish people, refused to comply with Haman's decree that everybody in town, everybody in the country, had to bow down to him when they saw him. Mordechai refused. Basic Jewish tenet of our faith is that we do not bow down to any human being. We only bow down to God. And Mordechai, upholding his faith, kept to that too. Haman makes the leap of all anti-Semites, and that is, one Jew is all Jews. And the fact that Mordechai refuses to bow down, he takes out his wrath against all Jews, and he wants to make a decree to get rid of all the Jews. He gets Ahasuerus, he gets the king on his side, and they hatch their ugly plot to get rid of every single Jew in the whole known world. It was the only time that all Jews everywhere stood to be destroyed. They stood to be wiped out. And this is, in fact, what Haman and Ahasuerus decree. Now, Mordechai, Esther, of course, are troubled by this terrible decree, and they set their plans at work in getting this plot undone. You would have thought that they would have just gone for plain diplomacy, but they don't. They gather together all the Jews, they fast, they do all sorts of spiritual actions in order to give us the inside track that they realized that this was not just a plot down here on earth, but anything of such severity has to be something that is coming as a message. Min HaShamayim, this is something from God. And because it is a heavenly decree, they realized that they had to confront it in a heavenly fashion, in a spiritual fashion. They get together all the Jews, they daven, they pray, they do all the right stuff from a spiritual point of view, and then Esther goes in to appeal to her husband, point out that it is Haman, this right-hand man of his, who is actually plotting to overthrow not just any people, but, as she says, my people, our people, the Jewish people. And the whole plot unravels. Haman had manufactured gallows to execute Mordechai and all the Jews, and in fact, it is on those very gallows that he himself meets his end together with his sons. And the whole story of Purim is turned on its head. The Jewish people are triumphant. They're allowed to celebrate this great day, not only in Shushan, in the capital of Persia, but all over the world, everywhere. And it becomes this national holiday, this national feast day, a celebration. And it's not just a celebration of, and it never is really, a celebration of the downfall of our enemies. It's never that at all. It's never the overthrowing of Haman and Ahasuerus that we celebrate, but rather the fact that the Jewish people united together as one, doing the right thing, will and do survive. And it's actually a bad idea for the anti-Semites of the world to rise up in any form of unity or a lack thereof against the Jewish people, to be anti-Semitic and to try and take on Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, God's holy people. Bad idea. Hasn't worked in the past. Not sure why they don't learn from history, but the Babylonians failed and the Egyptians failed and the Romans failed and the Germans failed and Haman himself failed too. May as well give it up. Bad job, bad idea. Let's rather focus on much more positive things about how we can bring peace into the world, how we can love each other more, how we can be closer to each other, and how we can create a world where there is peace, shalom, happiness, joy, and good things, rather than strife, violence, negativity, anti-Semitism, and the like. And so, as we turn to face the coming week of Purim, of the days of joy, of celebration, at our survival, and at our incredible triumph in this time, so we do celebrate the time of Adar, a time of joy, of happiness, of positivity, of positive energy. And we look forward to the coming week. We look forward to the coming days. We look forward to the coming time of simcha, of joy, of happiness, and everything that it brings. It is important to note that Mordechai is referred to in the Torah as being a Yehudi. Now, this is somewhat strange because we also mention that he comes from the tribe of Binyamin. He is called Ish Yamini. He comes from the tribe of Benjamin. Now, in those days, people were tribalized. In Israel, people were split into their 12 tribes. If you were from the tribe of Binyamin, you were a Yamini. You came from that tribe. Stands to reason that you wouldn't be from the tribe of Yehuda. So why is he referred to as a Yehudi? We actually find a number of important references to this and important things that are said about Mordechai being the epitome of a Yehudi. What does it mean to be a Yehudi? He is the first person who's actually called a Jew. He's called a Yehudi, which gives us the name a Jew. A Jew, Jew, coming from Judah, coming from Yehuda, Yehudi. That's what he's referred to. Now, what does it mean to be a Jew? Well, I think we have it with Mordechai spelled out just in his behavior. He behaves in the manner of a Jew. He stands up for what is right and what is correct. He is proud of it. He realizes and he knows that it's not about Haman or any of his ilk. It's not about governments of the day. It's not about people who rise up who want to try and destroy us. And it's not about all the demands and commands that they make as men of flesh and blood and as kings of flesh and blood down here on earth. It is rather, much more importantly, about God and about his rules and his regulations. It is much more about our Torah, our mitzvot, and the things that we have to do and we have to carry on. This is Mordechai's stance. He stands up for what is right and what is correct. He is proud of who he is. He knows that everything comes min hashamayim, everything comes from God. He knows too that it is only through the unity of the Jewish people that he can bring about the salvation of the Jewish people from any and every negative decree that might come our way. This is what a Yehudi does. This is Jewish behavior. And this, of course, is the epitome of what we should follow and we should think about in every stance and in every place and in every framework within which we find ourselves in our lives, not only now and not only with what is happening in Israel or around the world, but what happens on a regular basis in our lives, standing up for what is right and what is correct, doing what we should be doing as Jews, making sure that we as Jews know what it means to be Jewish. We identify with others, of course. Mordechai does just that. He realizes the plight of his brethren. He realizes the troubles that are around him. He realizes, too, that he has the ability to utilize his influence, not only in the government, but together with the queen, who was a relative of his, of course, and to get her to pull out all stops and do whatever she needs to do in order to bring about this salvation for the Jewish people. But much more importantly, it is about his actual behavior, the fact that he is unflappable, the fact that he is not going to be toppled from his stance of being the kind of Jew that we look up to, that we want to be like, that we want others to be able to emulate, someone who is observant of God's mitzvot, someone who realizes that Hashem is the power over all, and someone who realizes, too, that as a Jew, small as I may be and singular as I may be, number one, when I unite with others, number two, the power that I have within me with a godly soul, a godliness that is all-powerful and that can stand up to anything and everything. It is with those powers that Mordechai confronts the issues of the time, that he confronts the issues of the day, that he confronts the nasty people in the world who take us on and who say and do all sorts of negative stuff and are bent on our destruction, God forbid. It is Mordechai who is the epitome of the Yehudi. He is the Jew. He is the one who stands up for all of this, knows what he needs to do, does it and does it so well. And therefore, we celebrate Mordechai and Esther and the fact that there are Yehudim, that we are Jews, that we are Jewish, and that our Jewishness is what is going to make us triumphant now and for all time. So when we come to the time of Purim, we think about right now the fact that there is trouble in Israel and there are all sorts of difficulties. Of course, we cannot take our minds off the hostages, and we cannot take our minds off those who have been hurt and those who have lost their lives and the families that are affected and so on. And it may seem to many to be the wrong stance, in a way, to celebrate during these coming days and the coming week the festival, the Chag of Purim. How can we celebrate? How can we throw a party? How can we get up and dance? How can we say L'chaim? How can we be joyous at a time like this, when there is so much pain and suffering, when there is so much anguish, when there is so much torment, torture, mayhem, there's been murder, there's been so many things in our recent past that have made us feel, perhaps, that this is not the right time for celebration. Quite the contrary, Torah seems to be telling us, and that is that Purim is not only something that comes around once a year at this time and needs to be celebrated, but it is actually through our positive energy, through our simcha, through our unity and our joy, our happiness, and our collective happiness, that we will be triumphant. Yes, those who are suffering in Israel need our sympathy, but they need our positive energy as well. They need our simcha. If we want to think about those who are unable to celebrate, well, we've got to go doubly hard at it. We've got to celebrate even harder, because we've got to do this for those who are able to and those who are not able to celebrate, whether they are being held hostage or whether they are, God forbid, not alive anymore, or whether they are in a state whereby they cannot celebrate properly. We need to do that for them, because it is simcha, it is joy, it is happiness. It is a positive stance. It is that positive energy from within that has made us the people that we are and the way that we are. And with the simcha that we have, this is the way that we are going to not only see ourselves through this difficulty and these issues and this time of mayhem, upset, upheaval, and really torturous punishment and difficulty worldwide, but it's actually through our steadfast stance, like Mordechai, like Esther, of knowing that through our unity we will triumph, that through our simcha we will come through with flying colors. And it is that very energy that we need to send out into the entire world and make sure that the whole world dances together with us, celebrates together with us, knowing, number one, that God is with us, knowing, number two, that it is through our unity as God's children that we will be triumphant now and for all time. So, It is days of joy that we are in, and it's days of happiness that we have at our fingertips, and it's days of positive energy that we need to invest in, and we need to attach to, and we need to make sure that we are part of this beautiful time of Adar, of celebration in the build-up to Purim and Purim itself. Now, Dischem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dischem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning and pregnancy screening, fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dischem Wellness Clinic inside Dischem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. I think that Craig is signaling to me that I need to carry on talking. It seems that we're having a couple of computer glitches. I could sit here and sing you a song, but it wouldn't be as good as the ones that you usually get. And so I'm going to carry on with a little bit more about these days of Purim, these days of celebration, and so on. And perhaps let's do a little bit of a Did You Know Purim trivia quiz. Did you know that Haman was hanged on the second day of Pesach? Yeah, Purim is the anniversary of the Jews' victory celebration after their war against their enemies 11 months later. Did you know that Queen Esther's Hebrew name was actually Hadassah? Esther is actually Persian. Yes, Esther also means hidden. She was hidden. Not only was her inner beauty hidden, but Esther was hidden as a Jewess. Did you know that Mordechai was the first person to be called a Jew? Well, we mentioned that before, and before then, Jews were called Hebrews, Ivrim, or Israelites. Did you know that Ahasuerus searched for 4 years for a queen, during which he considered more than 1,400 contestants before he chose Esther? Did you know that Vashti, Ahasuerus' first queen, was the great-granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who was the Babylonian emperor who destroyed the first holy temple? Did you know that Haman was the one who advised Ahasuerus to kill Vashti? Well, we told that story before. It was Haman, this disgusting individual, who advised Ahasuerus to kill Vashti. Could you imagine the gall, the cruelty, the horrific kind of character that he was, that he advised his own king to kill the queen? Did you know there's an opinion in the Talmud that Esther was not beautiful at all, but in fact she had a greenish complexion? Did you know that Haman was once Mordechai's slave? Did you know that Mordechai, who refused to bow to Haman, was a descendant of Binyamin, the only one of Yaakov's sons who didn't bow to Haman's ancestor, Esau? Wow, talk about history repeating itself. Mordechai refused to bow to Haman, was a descendant of Binyamin, of Benjamin, the only one of Yaakov's sons who didn't bow to Haman's ancestor, Esau? Did you know that Esther's plan was to make Ahasuerus jealous of the attention she was giving to Haman so that he should kill them both? Did you know that Haman's decree was never revoked? Ahasuerus only issued a second decree, giving the Jews the right to defend themselves. Did you know that Mordechai was a very old man during the story of Purim? How do we know this? Because it's proven that he was already a member of the Sanhedrin. The highest court of Torah law in Jerusalem, 79 years before the miracle of Purim. So he was 79 years previously, he was already a member of the Sanhedrin. And at this stage of Purim, he obviously is then a really elderly gentleman. Did you know that every single Jew in the world lived in Ahasuerus' kingdom? So they were all included in Haman's decree. This is something we mentioned before. Never before and never since, thank God, has there been a decree against every single Jew everywhere in the entire known world. That was what happened in the story of Purim, in the story of Haman, Ahasuerus, Mordechai, and Esther. We're talking about every single Jew everywhere in all 170, all 175 known states of Ahasuerus's kingdom. This is where the Jewish people were told, known. It was a known thing that they were going to be destroyed, that they were going to be killed. Did you know that God's name is not mentioned even once in the entire book of Esther? In the whole story of Purim, we're going to read one. It's one of the books of the Torah. It's one of the books of the Tanakh. This book of Esther, the story of Purim, we're going to read it Saturday night a week and Sunday a week. We're going to read the story of Purim. It is quite a long Megillah, quite a lot that's read there. I guess that's where the statement comes from, the Ganze Megillah. We're going to read the whole Megillah. And in that whole Megillah, not once is God's name mentioned in the whole Megillah. God's name, too, is hidden in the Megillah. This is all about hiddenness. This is where it comes from that we wear masks. It's covering up, covering over. Because what you see on the outside is not necessarily what you get. When you look at something, it's not necessarily what you're looking at that you actually see. It is something much deeper. And of course, when we read and we look at the whole story of Purim, we can think that we're going through a whole sequence of events, a whole lot of causes and effects. We're going through all sorts of things that just happened, coincidences, and then a whole lot of stuff that leads us through the whole Megillah, which eventually arrives at the conclusion with the celebration on the story of Purim. We go through it all, and we don't necessarily realize in our own minds or in our own mind's eye that exactly as Mordechai and Esther did, that God is in control of everything. God is hinted at in the Megillah in the name Melech, the king. The king is mentioned so many times, of course physically referring to the king Ahasuerus, but the king is of course a reference on high to God Almighty, the King of Kings, who governs all, who sees to it that the enemies of the Jewish people are taken care of, just like Haman and Ahasuerus and the men of their ilk were. He sees to it that the victory comes to the Mordechais and Esthers and the Jewish people time and time and time again. Not because of their just being Jews, but because of their correct, good, positive energy, positive behavior, because of their simcha, because of their recognition of the fact that it is God Almighty who brings about that salvation and will continue to do so now and in all times. So I look forward to being back with you again soon on another episode of Judaism 101.9. I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead. Yes, of course, it is Shabbos coming up soon. And with all these special dates, we are now about to enter into the time of Purim, Purim time. This great and incredible Chag and incredible festival. And hopefully it will herald the arrival not only of peace in Israel and of healing for those who so desperately need it, but really a resolution to all the world's issues and problems with the ultimate victory of the coming of Mashiach immediately, speedily in our time. Take care and look forward to being back with you again soon. Take care.